It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. On many editions of Fix SA, we have circled back to the importance of education, and particularly at tertiary level. And I guess the argument is, if we make real progress on that front, things will generally improve and fall into place. And I'm going to mine down on that a little further in this particular episode. My guest on this edition of Fix SA is Taddy Bletcher. He's an actuary, he's an educational entrepreneur and co-founder and chief executive officer of something called the Maharishi Invincibility Institute. What is it? Well, it's an NPO that provides education to young people. If I'm not mistaken, 13 campuses in 5 countries, but I'm happy to stand corrected on that one. But most importantly, we want to look at the value, the importance, and how to fix education in South Africa. And I can think of no better person to talk to than Taddy. So Taddy, a very warm welcome. And with that introduction then, maybe let's start off with something sort of more policy driven. Are there fundamental shifts in the kind of educational paradigm in South Africa that we need to transform quickly in order to start fixing things?
Wonderful. So firstly, Jeremy, it's an absolute honor and privilege to be on your podcast, and thank you so much for the invitation and to talk about something that I'm very passionate about. I've spent 29 years working on, in fact, this is the 30th year. After making the decision not to emigrate, I was 2 weeks away from getting on the plane, and I've spent 30 years now working with young people in this beautiful field that you have called education. So just in terms of policy, the first thing to say is that the world is not standing around waiting for South Africa, and the world is moving quickly. It's hyper-connected. We see advancements in technology and particularly artificial intelligence on a daily basis that are truly nothing short of staggering. I mean, if you know, some of these things took place over 50 years that we see kind of every day, even that would be kind of amazing. And so we know that many, many jobs, I mean, if you take normal educated jobs, like, I mean, people for decades in South Africa have wanted to be an accountant, you know, but huge numbers of jobs could easily disappear because of artificial intelligence, because AI can just so easily do all these debits and credits and create automated systems to pull in all the data from different bank accounts and sort it all out. And things that would take teams of accountants weeks and weeks could literally be done in matters of minutes. I was just reading last week about a very important law case in the US where literally this law firm, which would have taken normally teams of lawyers, millions of dollars, weeks and weeks of work, used AI to write their final kind of report to the judge and the jury. And literally within 30 seconds, they got a 120-page document. They ended up winning the court case. It was a real-life court case. And then only at the very end, the one lawyer who had to be involved, who was an expert lawyer, who then worked on what the AI had done and just corrected a few minor things, then told the judge and the jury, by the way, this was all written by AI. And the judge said, well, AI is going to be taking my job and most of your jobs too, and pointing at the senior advocates. And this is a reality. And so South Africa, we want to think that we're immune from all of these things, but we're not. And it's critical we start to evolve our education system faster.
So, Taddy, in that respect then, and within your own organization, how are you starting to seed and develop that concept?
So, for us, the future of education in one sentence or phrase is a human interface to technology-enabled learning or mass-scale personalized learning. And so, what AI and technology allows is for individuals to have real pace set for them as an individual to go as fast as they can to learn any concept in mathematics, computer science, software development, whatever it is. and can be taken step by step as fast as they go. But the human interface for us is the really critical thing. And so I think just like technology is becoming a commodity and AI will mm-hmm. become a commodity, the thing that is going to be in hugely short supply are amazing evolved human beings that are able to integrate multiple fields of knowledge, able to be highly creative, to work well with other people, have emotional intelligence, etc. So there's a range of human qualities that are essential to develop. And so at the Marish Invincibility Institute, our view is that the content is important. It's not as important now as the skills, because content can be Googled in 5 seconds. Skills are more important, what you can actually do. But more important than that is what we call meta-learning or metacognition, which is these higher order human qualities, learning skills, thinking skills. So all those things I'm mentioning, creativity, problem solving, complex problem solving, being able to work in and amidst chaos and still be kind of field independent in the fact that you can still, you know, make calm decisions, think through things clearly. But even more important than that, we call mastery, just this word mastery, that we should be developing masters and not slaves. So what I mean by that, so many young people in the world today, you know, spend their time playing video games created by others, using software created by others, apps created by others, and less people create, which is why you've got fewer and fewer people becoming exponential billionaires, like richer than absolutely anybody, like the Google founders, close to $200 billion. And we know all these things, but it's a tiny, tiny number of people relative to the vast majority of the world that just consume all this stuff. And that's kind of like slavery. And what we really have to do is develop masters. So we think of it as developing enlightened, passionate, kind, respectful, loving, creative individuals who can work with anybody on any kind of problem. And that is the gift of real education, not just memorizing stuff and writing stuff down like a parrot.
So, Taddy, in that respect, then, if you were to extrapolate that philosophy on a wider scale, and again with a mindful eye on fixing the country, how then does one nurture creativity and critical thinking, not necessarily among students either, but just people generally, and hopefully also those in the business and political space?
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant question. It's what we spend all of our time on. And I think we've been really forward thinking in this. And firstly, before I say how I think we can do it, I want to share our results, if I may, because only then does it become interesting to really learn about our methodologies. So in the Marish Invincibility Institute and the other kind of free access higher education institutions we created before that, we took the view that every young person has genius inside them, and that if we base a person's future, their entire future for the next, you know, if somebody finishes matric at 18 or 19 years old, and we base the whole next 40, 50 years of their lives and careers on how they did in matric, it's a very kind of artificial, shallow, superficial, you know, measurement of that person's potential. And so we took the view that we're not going to worry about a matric exemption, having a degree pass or a diploma pass or even a certificate pass. Even if a person scrapes through, and in fact, even if they don't pass matric, we will still help them, but we'll put them through like a bridging program so that we can get them to a level that we think they can cope. And then we teach them the way we teach. So whether it's going to be maths or English skills or technology skills, but all of it is grounded in this very, very deep kind of paradigm of human development and developing the full brain, developing the heart and mind of this individual. And we literally 70% of the students we've taken over the last 24 years have not had, you know, all these matric exemptions and everything else. So they would not be eligible to get into any other university, public or private, in South Africa. 70% of them are women. Many of these women have unfortunately had very, very, very tough lives. Same with the guys. Most of these individuals are coming from families earning under 4,000 rand a month combined income. So they don't have the resources that you normally need to be able to be successful in education, to buy all the books and everything else. So we've never had a cent from government. And yet we've been able to take 23,665 unemployed people off the streets of South Africa with no money from government, students never paying more than 200 rand a month. And our graduates today, we've had a 95% consistent job placement rate into what I call high quality jobs. We've got some graduates going out into, you know, jobs where their starting salary is 500,000 rand a year in the tech sector and just growing numbers in that direction. And if you conservatively, if you just take the earnings of these individuals just at the time they first got a job, even if they just started off on 6,000 a month or 10,000 a month, that's well over 2 billion combined they're earning. And they will earn in excess of 59 billion conservatively in their working careers.
So, Taddy, let me pull you back then. Having given me the scope of what it is and the success rate that you have achieved, again, back to the balance between making sure that there is a creative and empathetic approach to the fix, but also making sure that you balance that with the hard critical thinking that is absolutely vital, particularly in the technical space.
Oh, that's exactly right. So we focus on these hard technical skills, what we call critical scarce skills. So we do things like cybersecurity, software development. We're going into artificial intelligence. We're working on mainframe analysts with IBM. We've got an incredible insurance program to produce insurance professionals, corporate finance, investment banking, difficult things that you would think a young person from a township, you know, a rural area who's unemployed, who basically, you know, scraped through matric or just failed matric would never, ever be able to do. And very difficult local and international exams. So we're not shying away from difficult content. We're going for the jugular and we're going for getting these individuals into high quality jobs and we're succeeding in it. And how we do it is that there are three components of education really. So firstly, there's what you learn or the content. And how we all grew up and went to school, and this has been the British system, et cetera, you know, for 200 years or whatever, has been very content focused. You write an exam, you have to get 50% at university, 30% or 40% to pass high school, and then you're considered to have passed. And that's really 90% of the focus in conventional education. About 8% is focused on the pedagogical approaches, which is how you learn. And so pedagogy is the approach to learning. And so whether how you train your teachers or whether you use teachers or whether you're using technology or the internet. So how that person connects with the knowledge. And probably only 2% of education focus in the world today is on the actual human being who's learning. Now think about it, that human being, now in our country, 1 in 10 of the students we're working with is growing up in a family with a mother and a father in a kind of stable family home. 90% are not. So young men growing up without a father figure, women growing up with seeing often terrible violence, et cetera, et cetera. This creates things like post-traumatic stress disorder, it creates anxiety, depression. A lot of these kids feel abandoned, et cetera. And this really affects their ability to learn. But the conventional education system is putting only about 2% of its focus onto the actual person who's learning. And that isn't the problem, frankly, of a professor in a university. Their issue is, you have to meet our entrance requirements. You come in, I'm going to teach. You have to write the exams. You must pass. If you don't, that's your problem. We take a completely different approach where the individual is at least 33% of that 100% equation. Pedagogical approaches are at least 33%. And the content is maybe just 33%, because what really matters is that you're developing this person that knows how to learn and is creative and all those things I was talking about. So then it comes down to your curriculum and how you build your processes. So we have a 10-hour day. It looks quite different to what you'd see in a traditional institution like you and I would have gone to. And about 40% of that time is focused on the actual individual who's learning, their ability to learn. And we start with things that you would never do in a conventional institution, like healing and finding your life purpose and forgiveness and really equipping a young person with all the basic tools that they need to be successful in a modern world, whether that's how to use technology, properly, effectively, whether it's how to use more advanced mathematics, you know, to solve kind of day-to-day life problems, whether it's to develop project management skills, whatever it is that an individual is going to need, plus this kind of inner development of the right from the level of consciousness. So we call this approach consciousness-based education. So we're developing the ego, being, emotions, the intellect, feelings.
Teddy, let me ask you this question again, just to interrupt, because again, I keep wanting to pull the conversation back to the bigger picture, to how we fix South Africa. How can you inculcate, do you think, a different ethos, a different approach to education in South Africa that's going to enable us to make more progress? Because again, the premise of the conversation, as I said when we started, is if we get education right, if we increase the pass rate, if we have more people that are both empathetic and analytical, the more this country is going to be on the road to success, if you agree with my thinking.
Totally agree with your thinking, which is that's exactly why we do what we do. So Jeremy, two ways we're focusing on that when we think about fixing South Africa. The first thing is we have to show examples of something that people don't conventionally believe is possible. And that is the idea of the Maharishi Invincibility Institute. Our target is to take 100,000 unemployed youth, to get them ultimately earning over R1 trillion in their working careers. And these would be individuals thrown away by society. So firstly, if we can prove 100,000 times what people would conventionally think is impossible, we are going to shift people's thinking and we're going to start to see changes in the conventional educational system. Second thing we can do, which we are doing, is we've created a wonderful initiative called E-Cubed, which works with the National Department of Basic Education. It's working. We actually have offices inside the National Department in Pretoria. We're one of four strategic projects of the National Department. And this initiative is we're not going to change just the exam focus at the end of the year, but we can change how kids learn during the year. So there's school-based assessment, which is kind of all your marks throughout the year without your final exam mark. And so we've instituted, for example, in many grades in South Africa, projects where kids are doing project-based learning for the youngest kids. Grade R to grade 3, we work together with Lego. There's a massive initiative where kids are learning using Lego, and we've got a whole curriculum developed where they learn how to be creative, build things, and solve problems in all kinds of new ways. So when we want to develop the brain, it's not just through one experience. It's the brain is developed through experiences, and then these neuronal pathways form. And the more frequently an individual can have those experiences, so they could if they can have that experience in grade 1, in grade 2, in grade 3, grade 4. And so these are kind of pedagogical approaches now. So instead of just, here's your book, learn it off by heart, go write the test, this is about working in teams, you know, solving exciting things that like link to your community, to your family, to your school. So, for example, we've got a wonderful project that before you leave primary school and you're basically 12, 13, 14 years old in grade 7, before you can go into grade 8, the kids have to leave a legacy in their primary school so they can, you know, put in a library in their school. They can build a soccer field. They can start a food garden. They can get books for the school. Now, just think of that, 1 million 12-year-olds across the country actually having to solve problems in teams. And now they must talk to the principal and talk to the parents and talk to the teachers and go do research and like think of different ideas and find ways to get resources. This is how people learn. It isn't just this kind of rote-based thing. So this is how we can do it at a national level. If we repeatedly give kids from the youngest ages all the way through a different pedagogical experience in which their voice matters, what they think matters, that their problems worth solving that are exciting and interesting, where they can develop empathy because this problem is around helping like a homeless shelter in their community or it's around, you know, whatever. So creativity, empathy, all these things can be developed. You need to have repeated experiences of them. And then over time, that is how people will just naturally think.
And Teddy, let me jump in there and suggest to you then that in order to strike out on that path that you're talking about, it does require a certain amount of bravery and the ability to pivot. So critical then that all educators cultivate or teach students how to cultivate resilience and adaptability to thrive in this environment that you told me earlier is changing minute by minute. How do you teach resilience and adaptability then?
That's a wonderful question. And so what is critical, you know, the teacher is actually the critical person in the school system. And so many people like to bash our teachers in South Africa. And I tell you, we've worked with thousands and thousands of extraordinary, amazing individuals who love their jobs and love the kids that they work with. Yes, even in public schools all across South Africa. And so we've developed, for example, a free program that teachers can get continuing professional development points. They get what's called SACE credits, and we call it a black belt. So if you can think of karate, where you start off as a white belt, and then you move, you know, to like an orange belt or yellow belt and a brown belt, et cetera, and eventually get to a black belt. This program that we've developed, and we've been able to get it zero rated by the various networks, teachers are able to access for free, and we've had over 37,000 teachers already completing this program, which has been fantastic, and able to get these continuing professional development credits. And this is all about moving teachers in the direction of learning how to do more of this project-based, program-based, play-based. There's about 10 different pedagogical approaches that we're teaching, which we just want to just slightly shift, you know, day by day, week by week, month by month, that teachers can teach the same content, but just teach it in a way that comes to life and really engages the students. And so this is what we do with the Black Belt. And we've created a wonderful WhatsApp-based platform for the national school system, which is now the de facto mobile phone-based app. And already we've got over 700,000 teachers and teaching assistants using our app. And this app is linked to the kind of thing that I'm talking about. So it gives teachers access to all the content, but it helps them think about solving problems in new ways. And it's a free tool, and it's very, very exciting.
Teddy, let me jump in at this point as I start to conclude the conversation. It is obvious to me that that you and the Institute are big thinkers, that you are striking a different and very successful path. I want to end by asking you two questions in one. Are you optimistic that South Africa can be fixed? And I think your answer is going to be yes. So my follow-up, which I'll put to you immediately, is where do you derive your optimism from?
A wonderful question. So am I optimistic? I believe we're a miracle nation. And I tell you, I was in Mexico during the previous World Cup in Japan, and I heard Siya Kolisi talking to his son. I don't know if you heard that. It was put on TV.
I did.
Yeah. I cried, I can tell you. And when we won that game, and I remember, you know, they interviewed the English captain and asked him, you know, the big game, it's a big day for you. You know, what do you think? He said, no, it's just another day for English rugby, you know, getting out there on the field. Our guys will, you know, the lads will do their best. But when they interviewed Siya Kolisi and he said, you know, we're doing this for 62 million people. And when they won, I mean, I literally got on the ground and I was sobbing, you know. And then we won again now. And those last three games where we just pulled together across the racial divides, all the crap, all the things that everybody thinks separates us, which is not true. And we know we're this miracle nation, and we've seen it a number of times. So am I optimistic? Yes, I do believe we can pull we've got just the most extraordinary people in this country, and we've got such incredible innovation going on. If people are prepared to look at it and then start to be open-minded and scale these things. And then what gives me the optimism? You know, when I was young at school, I remember learning about apartheid in history and thinking and feeling really sad about it. You know, this is something I can never change. This is, you know, other people do this to us. You know, this is just, history just happens to us. We can't, you know, other people create history. And then as I've grown up, and you talk about being brave, and I was very lucky to meet Mandela in depth twice, and he obviously always spoke about you can be afraid, but you can still be brave at the same time, can feel fear and still be brave. And I've realized growing up that we can change history. We are changing history if we're prepared to actually do something different. I mean, we've changed the history now of 21,000 people's lives. Mm. We want to change the history of millions of people's lives through the school system.
First of all, thank you for the optimism, for the enthusiasm, and I really appreciate that fresh thinking. And that's where we are going to leave it. Tadi Bletcher, the Chief Executive Officer of the Maharishi Invincibility Institute, thank you for joining me on this edition of Fix SA on Monday. Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.